Welcome to the 72nd Monk and We're Back podcast. Email us at monkcast@gmail.com to leave comments and contributions. Tonight in a pod, we stand around our spinning orders, listen to some contributions, and in the spotlight, Nick discusses Snaint. Momcast, the comic book podcast that would never stoop so low as to use a network to broadcast the propaganda of a dying authoritarian regime.
Return to your homes and read comic books! There is nothing to see here!
Around the mic tonight are...
I am Nick.
Hi, I'm Jane.
Hi, I'm James.
I, 72nd, it's not one of those words you tend to ever say. It sounds funny, doesn't it?
Yeah.
72nd.
Apparently I can't say contributions.
First, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth. 72nd.
That's true. It's not like Jane's had much practice saying
more
cause to say contributions either, so.
No, that's
it's understandable
never,
she'd stumble under that work.
How are you guys? What have you been up to? What have you been doing? Jane, what have you been doing? You've got the most interesting week.
I haven't been at work. That makes it more interesting, doesn't it?
It does.
I have been a lady who lunches, and I'm quite ready for my lazy day tomorrow, because I have done lots of stuff this week.
Mm.
It's all been very exciting. Got surrounded by donkeys on Tuesday. That was a bit scary. They don't move, and they all look a bit like Eeyore, and they all seem a bit depressed.
Terrible donkey horror show. That's why Eeyore's like that.
Yeah. I think one of them was just standing at the back of the car, and we were trying to reverse back, and he just wasn't moving. It's like he wanted to end his life.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, and some woman had to push him out of the way, and she looked at me really smugly. I was like, well, if I was going to be evil, I would have pushed them, but I didn't, because they have right of way, so we're going to let them go in their own time. But she pushed him out of the way, so she could be the cow.
But the donkey's not going to care. He could literally have been there all day.
Yeah, but he might have bucked me as well.
It's not that they've got anywhere else to go.
Hmm? They were very interested in James's daughter.
Did you learn a valuable lesson from Buckaroo?
Yeah.
Is Buckaroo a donkey?
It is.
Isn't it?
I think it's an ass.
You're an ass.
They try to eat my daughter. That's a horror show.
No. They were fascinated with Scarlet. There was two behind the open car door while James's wife trying to put Scarlet in the car, watching her, and there was two right by her pushchair. They were fascinated. She was a baby Jesus.
She's a remarkably attractive child, though.
Animals are drawn to her. She is like a baby Jesus.
Animals and human. She's possibly the most attractive child ever.
We had a baby around this week that we hadn't seen at the house before, and the dogs were drawn to him. But he was very cute. I don't know if he's quite as cute as Scarlet, but he's comparable size and similar sort of. Actually, looked quite similar in similar sort of thingy. But
all
in,
them
but
babies
in blue.
Are like a bloody saint, don't I?
But in blue, though,
in blue,
not in pink.
Oh, he was wearing blue.
Yeah,
reinforcing gender stereotypes.
But the babies,
is very important.
The dogs really liked him. But it was difficult to tell if it was just because he had food all over his face. That's almost too tempting for a dog.
Yeah.
What else though?
I went clothes shopping with my boyfriend yesterday, and I spent 40 minutes standing outside changing rooms.
That doesn't sound
right.
That
sounds knowing a boyfriend, that sounds exactly right.
I
see from Twitter your boyfriend's gone all porky.
Oh, he thinks he has. He hasn't.
I noticed that. I thought he was looking chunky.
He doesn't at all. You're evil, James.
Give it a second and he'll end up going. Give it a few more days and he'll end up going to that place, the shop. Is it the big and tall man place?
The Lard Arston. Wide.
Porky clothes.
My comments about your boyfriend are a classic misdirection, Jane. Because actually, I've got a massive crush on him.
Yeah, he is all sexy and slender. He doesn't need to lose any weight.
He's svelte, I think.
He is. But it took him a long time to try on several pairs of jeans.
Yeah, that sounds
that was good,
right.
I guess, if you're going to buy multiple pairs of jeans, you want to be sure. But it was
someone in the couple has to be the girl.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was a bit sexist.
It was, and you're also saying I'm butch, thanks.
I think we've
that is not what I said at all.
I think there's an outside chance we've just lost a listener as well.
And while I was waiting, because it was upstairs in a shop in West Quay, and I was watching the Sky stall that's in West Quay, and
the poor woman who was trying to stop people and ask them if they want to know about Sky, and they're just ignoring her and the filthy looks she was giving them. She was entertaining, and I don't think she likes her job very much.
Did you feel sorry enough for her to walk past and engage her in a conversation about Sky?
No, she didn't ask me about anything.
You didn't feel that sorry for her?
She wasn't there when I came out.
No.
Do you like to ask me about Sky? I've got Sky, it's good.
No, I don't want to know about Sky.
How many episodes of Loose Women did you watch?
One. With James's wife.
How many either makeover or homes in the country type houses did you watch?
None. I really haven't watched any daytime TV.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm busy. That's the problem. She's been so busy.
Can you watch some tomorrow? Otherwise, I'm going to think you've wasted your whole week.
I don't think I'll be watching TV tomorrow. I'll be sleeping. And
she did air quotes when she said that.
And today I went to see Black Swan.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of it, Jane?
It's okay.
James, what have you been up to this week?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, you put me on the spot. I didn't expect to be asked that question. I had a nice lunchtime trip to the comic book shop with my chums yesterday.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
That was nice.
That was all right.
At the weekend. What did I do at the weekend?
Watched football.
Oh, yeah. I went to a friend's house and watched the plucky underdog Southampton win the first half against Manchester United.
How many of you were there?
There were five at one point. That reduced to three.
I am not often around blokey men, yeah. Blokes.
Mm.
There wasn't at any point any wanking onto a biscuit.
No wanking on the biscuit.
Is that a traditional thing?
I don't. I hear about it. I've heard about it since school. I've never actually known anyone who's really done it, but I always feel the need to ask, in case.
Why?
Have you ever watched pornography around other men? I've always found that really... It happened to me once in the sixth form, and I found it very awkward and peculiar, and have never really wanted to do it, but you keep hearing, oh yeah, we were stuck on a porno, it was really funny. I don't find pornography funny.
Yeah, no, well, I have, but not so much as I've sat down with a group of men and said, you know what, chaps, would be nice. Now, let's sit down and watch some porno.
Hmm.
It's kind of, when I was younger, I was a chef in a hotel. I used to spend quite a lot of time at the staff house with my friends. And I'd been there on evenings when there were parties, and one of the chaps had some porno going in his room. But I don't think any of us sort of decided to sit down and watch it all the way through and then critique the story and the acting.
I just find it very strange. It was like
none of us masturbated each other.
My experience was a bunch of teenage guys in a room all kind of wishing they were somewhere else.
Yeah.
With or without the porn. It's just weird. I don't get it.
I think it's either best as a solitary pursuit or maybe as some sort of marital aid with a loved one.
An ex-girlfriend of mine actually said that she was at one boyfriend's house and him and his mates were watching porn, and that was the first time she'd really seen porn. And I was like, that's even weird. None of this makes any sense to me. I don't understand. People
don't
are weird.
I
never watch it anyway these days.
What if you enjoy it? And it shows. Wouldn't that be really embarrassing?
I was lying on my front.
Yeah.
Time. It was very peculiar.
Probably if you're a teenage boy, he's got an erection, would be something you say.
That's weird. That is weird.
I used to.
So what's this got to do with coming onto a biscuit?
When I was younger, I used to quite often lie on my front watching TV and stuff, and I can very distinctly remember that's how I was lying that time. And also when I watched an episode of V around at a friend's house, and it was very uncomfortable because there was a blonde lady in V, the original series in the 80s, that I was quite fond of.
Do you think you felt any more uncomfortable than I feel right now?
What was with the biscuit thing? I don't get this biscuit thing.
I think maybe we should tell you all about that later.
In the old days...
It's not going to be things where you say, ask your mum.
No, we'll have a conversation about it when we walk
in. In the old days, we didn't have two girls, one cup to entertain ourselves. Yeah.
Also this week, so what did I do? I watched football with some friends.
Yes.
Wanking. No wanking at all. It was very nice. Very little beer as well. It wasn't really a riotous blokey night. I think I had one beer, a very hot chilli, and some cigarettes.
Mm.
That was very nice. And then on Sunday, I relaxed, because that's what you're meant to do.
Mm.
I haven't really done much. It's all about this weekend for me, really. It was preparing for this weekend.
You'll tell us about that at the end of the show, though.
Might do. Depends how desperate I am to run off home and have my tea, really.
Oh. Did you at any point smoke some cigarettes and watch some Captain Kangaroo?
No Captain Kangaroo.
Okay, cool. Just checking.
Confirming. Although I did move my... Because we're moving stuff out, because of the thing we're doing this weekend, moving stuff out of our dining room, which makes our flat sound much more grand than it really is. And I moved the computer into the bedroom, and I said to Nicola, my wife, I said, well, I'll set it up so we can use it. And she's like, actually, well, the desk would fit quite nicely in the window of our flat, and where obviously our Scarlett, our daughter's getting more mobile, it'd be nice to have room in the dining room, and it's one less thing for her to damage in the dining room, the living room.
Yeah.
As she gets older and starts getting into things, so why don't we put it in the bedroom? And I said, okay, so it means we already had a television in there, so I plugged it in. Now I've now got a 32-inch computer monitor, which I'm very happy
about.
In the
bedroom.
Yeah, it's like when you're in front of it, it's like IMAX, you know, like
it
when you're watching.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, because I've had Jane in my bedroom recently.
No, your wife had me in her bed. No, your wife showed me.
I'm so glad I left the webcam going. It's like, how creepy, is this the creepiest Mumcast yet? Answers
well,
to Mumcast
within 3 minutes of coming in the door today, no, like walking through the door after Willow escaped, this conversation started, so.
Fair enough. But yeah, it's like IMAX, not IMAX, where you physically have to turn your head to see the whole screen. It's like that, using a 32-inch computer monitor. You have to move your head to see the whole screen. So it's quite a scene, man.
I can imagine.
And it gives me a stiff neck and makes my eyes go wobbly. Apart from that, it's brilliant.
That sounds awesome.
Yes.
This is actually, I think, the third time I've heard this.
I am really happy about it.
No, I know. Yeah. But all I can think is you have a 32-inch screen in your bedroom with a connection to the internet.
Mm.
That just... You're never, ever going to be able to convince me that you don't, like, have swinger parties when I'm not there.
When you're not there? Around.
Well, he's not had any while I've been there.
Yeah, I don't have any at all. It's probably...
Well, because you're putting loads of... That's what you're doing at the weekend, isn't it? You're putting loads of polythene down, and when the whole place is wipe free, you're going to invite us all round to see it. He said, doing air quotes. Isn't that what's happening?
There's going to be dust sheets and stripping at the weekend. Yeah. Maybe some varnishing.
Yeah.
Definitely some varnishing.
Lots of varnishing.
Yeah, lots of that. Me with another man on my knees and hands.
Hands and knees?
No, knees and hands. Knees first. Always knees first, Nick. Varnishing. Furiously.
That's the proper procedure.
That is the proper procedure. We're going to...
Even sure if this is an innuendo.
We're going to pull up, strip, make good, and then varnish.
Four times as
well. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you've got to do four-time varnishing.
Right, what did you do?
What did I do? Going backwards, I had to rescue my dog from the street. Thanks, Jane.
That was not my fault. How was that my fault?
No, normally I'm better about holding her back, actually. It wasn't your fault. I just knew you'd feel guilty if I...
I do feel guilty. Yeah.
Should do.
She was pretty good, though. She did shoot one way and then went the other way and then came back in. So.
She didn't die under the wheels of a car,
no.
Which was really... That's my main aim when I take her for a walk. It's like we trained her really early. Sit. She's good at stay. She's quite good at come back. She's all right at don't die under the wheels of that car. Thus far, she's been really good at following. Although the other day she wasn't. The other day when I walked her at the weekend, she has a tendency. She's fine the whole way around the park until we're just leaving, and she knows she's about to go back on the lead. And then she runs off to where the car park is, and there are cars going across all the time, which is a little bit nerve-wracking. I don't know how you get a dog to love their harness and their lead so much. The other dog's she's weird about it. The other dog loves her harness, and she loves her lead, and she loves going back on the lead when it's time to go home, no matter how long you've been out for. The little one is more normal and doesn't want to go home, but the big one seems perfectly happy. She's more happy on the sofa than she is running around, I guess.
Me too.
And we had the baby round, another baby round at the weekend. That was
good. I'm not interested in that.
Baby's good. I didn't really know. There was work. There was stuff. I was at work. That was awesome. No, that's it. Can we move on?
I see you've got two computer monitors.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's quite a small display, isn't it? Do you feel inadequate?
No, because you see, in sort of. technical or slightly geeky, and I'm not very computer geeky, but in technical or geeky terms, having two monitors is quite like cool and high tech, and you can move stuff from one screen to another. Having a TV, a really big TV monitor, well, the only way that could be more tacky is if you actually had it stuck to the wall, really.
Would it make you feel worse if I said I've still got my other monitor?
Are you going to attach that? No, that's brilliant. Mm. What you need is, because that's fine, if that's just your central monitor and then you've got a couple of other monitors attached onto the top of it, that'd be brilliant. Because then it's a bit like Swordfish, and you can see how good you are at hacking into mainframes with a gun at your head and a lady on your penis.
Do you know what? I was really pleased.
You've seen Swordfish, right, Jane? Because you're just looking at me like I'm insane.
Okay. I was so pleased with myself with what I'd done with
Hugh
my
Jackman.
With my TV.
Really?
I'd not really thought of it as tacky until you said that.
Now you're not going to be able to shake it. No. I'm not even convinced it is, but it's it feels not. Like it should be.
But you've got an additional monitor, so you can watch the BBC. You can read the BBC News website whenever you feel like it.
You need to attach the other monitor on top of it at a slight angle, and you need to be in the zone. You need to do a Spider Jerusalem. Sit on a really low chair with your legs up in the air going, get me more coffee, bitch! You wouldn't say that to your wife,
angrily
obviously.
Smoking cigarettes.
Yeah,
and
angrily smoking cigarettes and perspiring uncontrollably while naked. Just like frantically tapping away like Jessica Fletcher on acid.
Why is it always on acid?
I don't know. On crack. That's more like on crack. Really,
People don't do that on. No.
Because Jessica Fletcher on acid wouldn't be typing. She'd be like really distracted.
Jessica Fletcher on acid would be like staring at potpourri.
Yeah.
And then making a pointless trip down to the 24-hour garage with her friends to buy things that they think they might need.
Mm.
When they get there, they realise they haven't got any money with them anyway, so they'll have to trudge back.
Someone will tell her there's been a murder while she's been visiting.
She'll freak out.
She'll freak out and then forget 30 seconds later.
And not want to go home for 24 hours
Jessica
afterwards.
Jessica Fletcher on amphetamines.
Yeah, no, that's probably more accurate.
I don't even know what that was.
That's Speed Gags.
Oh, okay.
I read about those in the book.
This conversation is much more interesting than any of the stuff I've done this week.
Definitely, almost, probably, certainly talk about comics. Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
So, I'm a bit busy at the minute, so you're only getting a quick one. Please deal with it or stick a willy up your bum unless you'd enjoy that, as some are wont to do, in which case that's totally cool, but instead do something unpleasant to yourself to demonstrate my lack of caring for length or quality. I say that, but I really love you all. So there, moving on. I haven't had any time to grab a comic to read, so instead of doing that normal boring review stuff, I'm going to talk about a boring review of something retroactively. I know, innovation, motherfucker. So I want to talk to you about... bugger. Hold on. I want to talk to you about Tom Pyer and Rags Morales' Our Man series from some years back. Or at least the first 10 issues of it, because that's all I've read, and it's not collected in trade, so it's a mother to track down. Anyway, Our Man was a nice little 25-issue series that span out of Grant Morrison's Justice League of America, about a time-travelling future robot with nigh-on infinite power, at least until he restrains himself considerably in the name of finding more humanity, something he aims to achieve by chilling with his homie Snapper Carr, who none of you may remember as that kid who got to hang out with the Justice League. Hijinks consistently ensue, usually involving a Mazo, who was substantially altered at various points over the series for the sake of being a totally interesting villain. And many an interesting thing is approached in these plots. No, I don't know why I'm being coy about spoiling too much of the plot either. This series is old, but who knows, maybe it'll be collected in a trade or four one day. Maybe. Never. Tom Pyer cracked out some brilliant writing throughout the 40% of Our Man I've read, presenting an interesting look into both someone who's striving to understand his humanity, or a potential lack thereof, the titular Our Man. Titular? Shut up, Max, one take. And someone who is all too human, trying to just be himself wherever possible. It's intriguing, to say the least, and gives Pyer a chance to show off his brilliant hand on serious comedy. That particular brand of funny that is something hilarious placed into an otherwise perfectly serious situation. And I love him for it. Rags Morales is an interesting part of the Our Man team too, to say the least. I've never been much of a fan of the man whose style in such titles as, well, just First Wave, it's all I've read of his. Now I think about it, just that. Anyway, it felt altogether too uninteresting and lifeless to me. So believe me when I say that when I found the art one of the best things about this series, that I say it with a slightly higher pitch due to the shock involved in me saying it. It's vibrant, it's expressive, and more than anything, it's perfectly complementary to the writing. Something some artists just don't achieve nowadays. No name drops this time. Oh, Arrow Man is a bloody gem of a title, and honestly, if you haven't read it, I don't blame you. I only found out about this because of another podcast that has something to do with rockets and war and something called Ajax, doing an interview with Mr. Pyre some time ago. If you can hunt out the series and back issues, and you should, then go get it and bloody well read it. You won't regret it, and oh man, I've been talking too long and I don't really want to, so I'm going to go. Did you enjoy this, which was all one take? That's rare for me, and I hope that you enjoyed it, but really, I just want to go and deal with some things now. Wish me luck and shit. Blah, 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 blah.
Was I first? Do you want me to talk first?
Yes, yeah. You can tell your first, because your name appears on that list first.
No one really believes that we have a plan. I got Amazing Spider-Man, Scarlet, and Deadpool Max, and Thor, all of which I still haven't read.
Oh, yet. Thanks very much, Nick.
But those are comics, specifically Amazing Spider-Man, Scarlet number 4, and Deadpool Max, all comics that came out this week. My comic's behind me. The main comic, the only comic from this week that I really read, was Invincible Spider-Man 500.1. Now what they've done is...
Sorry, who?
The Invincible Iron Man, not Spider-Man. Did I say Spider-Man?
You did, yeah. You've got Spider-Man in the brain. You're thinking about his Lycra costume.
I'm going to mistake you for a Spider-Man.
You're not even trying now with the accent.
Invincible Spider-Man... Invincible Iron Man. Fuck's sake! Point one. This is, I guess, Marvel going back to the normal run of like acting like they haven't been artificially creating number ones every couple of years.
Sorry,
does that sound like I'm talking about Wii?
It does.
Artificially creating number ones for the collector's market every couple of years and creating volumes. They've gone back to numbering as if they've been running like the whole way through from Iron mm-hmm. Man number one. I'm pretty sure they did this a few years ago anyway. They've added the conceit of the point one. I sound like I'm being really cynical about this, and I kind of am, the point one to a few of the different books that they've got. I think Wolverine's going to be a point one as well. The suggestion, I think, is that it's jumping on point for people. Now, it's still written by Matt Fraction, with art by, I think it's Salvador LaRocca. Hang on, probably says at the back. Yeah, Salvador LaRocca. I think it's the same creative team as it has been for a while. And I don't know if I talked about the previous issue of Invincible Iron Man, which was like a really big, like giant-sized story with a few different artists mm-hmm. working on it. And it was just this lovely, like self-contained story about the consequences of Iron Man's technology being out in the world, the long-term consequences of it. Spider-Man guested in it, and it was all wrapped up really nicely. It was quite a complex story, actually, incredibly mature for like a mainstream superhero book. This is peculiar in that it's still a really, really good issue. It's also self-contained, like the previous one. And it follows... It's basically about Tony Stark going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and telling the people there about his alcoholism, but basically talking about his life from very early, from when he was a kid, all the way to the present, to where he is. But framing as he's telling them about his life, and he's being heavily euphemistic about it. He's not saying... He says, "I'm Tony Stark," but he doesn't talk about being Iron Man or anything. You're sort of seeing the different stages of his life. It gives quite a convincing account, and I don't know if it's one that's been explored in the comics before, about where his alcoholism came from, and also how he's come to terms with it. I've never seen him going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting before, but this one takes it as read that he has been. And it basically talks about him talks about his life as Iron Man as well throughout. And it's really well written, and it's really nicely... the art's really good. It's a really deep reading experience, and I listened to a podcast recently that counted Matt Fraction in among a bunch of writers who seem to be getting a lot of traction now, who are very into their idea dumps. Mm-hmm. And the suggestion there was that maybe it's at the expense of characterisation sometimes, I think. Certainly with some writers, but Matt Fraction's name is mentioned alongside. And I think the previous issue of Iron Man and this one have sort of shown that he's really very good at... He really understands what makes the characters tick. He just doesn't show... He sort of shows, not tells, most of the time.
Sure.
So in this particular instance, Tony Stark is telling you the story of his life. And it's really well done. As a jumping... It's a peculiar... book, though. I mentioned this to you guys earlier on, because I guess it's supposed to be the point of it is it's a jumping on point, and it doesn't really work as a jumping on point so much as a jumping back in point. It's speaking as someone who's been aware of Iron Man in all the time I've been reading Marvel Comics, but not necessarily been reading the book itself a lot of the time, just seeing him in his new unit, new outfit when he's got it, and trying to work out why he's in this new outfit and stuff in books like Secret Wars and stuff like that and the Avengers. It was interesting for me because I already knew most of the stuff that was being talked about in the story. I already kind of knew because I know about Iron Man's background. I'm not sure if for someone picking it up having never read Iron Man before, a lot of that stuff's necessarily going to make sense. It kind of mines the whole continuity of Iron Man rather than introducing the character. It sort of gives a context to where this book is in relation to all of the rest, sort of thing. And so there are lots of scenes like Warren Ellis's extremist run on here is taken up in one panel or two panels. I've read Extremis, so I know what those panels allude to. But if you hadn't, it might just be very confusing.
I've read it too. It's really good.
Yeah, I think it was your copy though. My point is, you'd get the same from me as from this as I did, cool. James. I don't know if Jane would necessarily, for example, having not really, you know, even if you know the character from the films, there's lots of stuff referred to in this that isn't really referred to in the film. So it's sort of like the whole extremist story, and like that his battle with alcoholism that like happened across a couple of years worth of comics, I think. I don't know.
Devil in a Bottle or something, isn't that called? Yeah.
And also Stark Industries being taken over and stuff like that. But the as far as a portrait of guys, I'm not an alcoholic. This is like a reverse Alcoholics Anonymous.
Denial is one of the signs.
I think I'm not an alcoholic, but it certainly makes sense and it ties into... in this book, it seems to make sense, and it also ties into his other like addictions and foibles as well. And it's good. It's a really good issue. And I think even someone who hasn't read Iron Man before would be able to appreciate it. But it's not strictly speaking a jumping on point, as far as I'm concerned. Cool. A jumping back in point.
Is it good?
Yeah, I really liked it. Cool. I really like the creative team on this. I'm a little bit... I Salvador Larocca...
Is it the sort of stuff, though... Because something that bemuses me, and I'm really bad at doing this. Sometimes I'd rather remain confused. It's one of those books where you think, if you weren't an Iron Man fan, it's going to be half an hour on Wikipedia to understand what's happened, or...
Maybe not. I think you can take... what's happening, you can take the basics of the story at face value, but if you're someone like me especially, I think most people would be able to look at the panels that allude to other stuff and maybe just ignore them.
Is it almost
for me that'd be like ignoring half of the book?
Is it Easter egg, or is it almost like a nod to the fans, like Easter egg sort of material?
It is pretty much in text. It's not subtext or anything. Sure. One thing that's weird about this, and I'm really not sure exactly what's gone on with the art on this, because Salvador LaRocca is credited as artist on the whole thing. Now, I don't know if I've really mentioned this when I've talked about the book before. Salvador LaRocca often use. He's a really good artist who often uses photo reference. And the main person that I really notice him using photo reference on is Tony Stark, because basically in so many of the panels with Tony Stark in, it's basically Sawyer from Lost, but with black hair and a goatee. It's sort of, I don't know if you can see it just looking, but it's like really, I can't not see it. Bizarrely, in the actual flashback panels, his style is completely different and doesn't look like it's photo reference, and it's just lovely. So it feels to me like he's a perfectly good artist who uses photo reference maybe a bit too much, because I imagine it saves time and stuff. I don't have a problem with people using photo ref. I know it's like a debate that runs through. I don't have a problem with people using photo ref, but if you're going to pick someone as your main model, who is so recognisable, you kind of need to disguise them a little bit more, is kind of my feeling. But this other style that he's using throughout is like really sort of detailed and nice, and I'd like to see more of it. It looks like a completely different artist. So, anyway, but it's good. Cool. It's really good. James.
Hello. I picked up the... First of all, I only picked up two books, and three 2000 ADs, bizarrely.
Mm-hmm.
You picked up three copies?
No, they were different issues, they're different progs.
Oh, right.
That's 3 weeks. That's not too bad.
3 weeks.
Have you read them?
I haven't yet, no. I thought I'd save them for my quiet moments at the weekend.
Right.
I bought part two of The Sleeping and the Dead, the Hellboy story I spoke about recently.
Yes.
Which concluded in a satisfactory manner. I'm not sure... I said I'd not really read Hellboy before. Mm. I want to read more, but really on recommendation rather than from reading this book.
Hmm.
Really good horror yarn with a twist. Kind of a twist to your standard vampire tale. But not the sort of book necessarily that would make me want to explore Hellboy more. I don't. His character isn't explored particularly.
Hellboy's a really peculiar experience, because so many of the stories seem to be like vignettes.
Yeah.
But there are loads of them.
Yeah.
So after reading lots of them, it feels like you're reading lots of vignettes and not necessarily learning that much about him. And at the same time, they're quite often an exercise in craft, in that you know that you're reading something that is really well written.
Oh God,
yeah. The art is amazing as far as the storytelling goes.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, you feel like you maybe wanted more.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
So it's a great story. I'm really glad I read it. Mm. I enjoyed it as a story, just in terms of. I don't think it's really told me anything about Hellboy that actually I probably didn't know before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the fault of the comic, that's the fault of the reader.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
I am an idiot. The only other book I bought this week was one that I agonised a little bit when I thought I was going to have to talk about on the pod, being that there was only a couple of books I'd bought, couldn't really find anything on the shelf that leapt out at me and I really wanted to buy. And it's something I've been buying since the first issue. It's been running for 19 now.
Mm-hmm.
That I enjoy, and I'm not sure if I've spoken about it before, because I think on the surface of it, it could possibly seem like a slightly vacuous title. It's Gotham City. So I'm doing it again, aren't I? I'm building up in a tedious manner.
No, it's not. It's not tedious. It's just it's something I do. You are, what's the word? Carry on.
It's Gotham City Sirens.
I remember what the word is in
there. Which is the, I guess you'd call it, a companion bat book, and it follows the misadventures of Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and Harley Quinn, who are all living together.
The baddies.
For the purposes of the... Well, yes, but they're rather more... Their characters are rather more complex in this book than just down and out baddies. This is written on this occasion by Peter Calloway, with pencils by Andres Ginaldo.
Yeah, I don't know. Ginaldo. Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it concludes
Andre
the story. Yeah, Ginaldo, if you like. Yeah,
maybe.
If you like, that's fine.
Qualifying, that's the word. You got into a qualifying
yes,
loop.
I did, very much so. And I shouldn't have to justify this book, because it is actually consistently very enjoyable read.
I should have punched you or slapped you rather than...
Or thrown a bucket of water on me.
That would have gone on your comics. And my underwear.
True.
And my wife's underwear.
Oh, what a scene that would have been.
Yeah. Jane.
Okay.
The story that I think pretty much is ongoing, it doesn't really conclude. One part finishes, another one starts. If you like.
One door opens. One door closes, another one opens.
It's true with this story. One door does close, another one opens. It kicks off with Talia Al Ghul. That's correct, isn't
Talia
it?
Talia Al Ghul, yes. Ra's Al Ghul.
Ra's Al Ghul's daughter.
His daughter.
And mother of Damien.
Damien Al Ghul.
Or Wayne. Is he
called Wayne or Damien?
Damien Wayne.
All right, okay.
The current Robin is in a standoff with Zatanna, and he can tell it's Zatanna because she says Zatanna about half a dozen times when talking to her, which is the only thing in the writing that really jarred, is the amount of time that Razzle's daughter said Zatanna.
Do you think the person writing it was so excited that they were getting to write a book with Zatanna, and maybe it's like a dream come true, but they just couldn't actually believe it?
It could be, I think. But it's essentially, she's trying to wipe Catwoman's, Selina Kyle's mind, because obviously she knows Batman's true identity, or Bruce Wayne's Batman's true identity.
Talia Al Ghul is trying to do
Talia Al Ghul's, presumably to protect her son.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember, I should have read the last.
Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne Damien.
Wayne David.
That's right. And Zatanna's there to stop her. And the book starts as a bit of a action-packed showdown between two powerful women of the DC universe.
Huzzah!
And culminates in Zatanna having to rescue Selina. But then the book goes on to be quite an interesting character piece, looking at the dysfunctional relationships that Selina Kyle and Harley Quinn have with the men in their lives.
Those men being Batman and the Joker.
Batman and the Joker, of course. Mm-hmm. And ultimately leads Harley Quinn to make a big decision at the end of the book.
Ooh.
But what started off as, I'll be honest with you, a relatively light, almost cheesy, for want of a better word, story, turned into something actually a little more deep, a little more complex, and something I really, really enjoyed. Mm. So it's quite a nice surprise. You know, I think there's obvious parallels between the relationship Selina Kyle has with Batman and the relationship that Harley Quinn has with the Joker. And it's Selina recounting her misgivings with Bruce that leads Harley to think more closely about the relationship she's had with the Joker. It was a really satisfying read, a really satisfying ongoing book, which also features one of my favourite sort of incidental characters in the DC universe. For some reason, I find the Broker fascinating.
I don't really know who that is.
He's a shady character who finds supervillain hideouts.
Ah.
Which I quite like.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure.
There's a nice bit of to and fro in between him and Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn, who wants him to find her a disused funfair.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I can't remember exactly what he says, but he said he wouldn't be doing his job properly if he didn't have a disused funfair available for Gotham's more seedy denizens.
At some point.
Really, really good book, though. Really solid, enjoyable read, and one that can sometimes just feel like it's trotting along on certain zones, but never gets to the point where I feel like I want to drop it.
Yeah.
Because ever so often you get an issue like this that really opens your eyes. It's to the characters, really develops the characters, and makes, you know, some peripheral sidekick characters, much not Catwoman maybe, but Harley Quinn, much deeper, more complex human beings.
Yeah, I mean, you like the characters and they're well presented there, so
they are,
it can tick along a little bit because it's just nice having them there every month.
It is, and it's, I like to think that it's not too salacious in terms of the way they treat the female characters as well. It's not, for want of a better phrase, a tits and arse comic book.
Oh my goodness, James.
What?
Harley Quinn is like almost too nice to be with the Joker, and Catwoman's almost too naughty. Mm.
Yes.
Is the thing.
Exactly.
I like those covers as well.
Yeah.
The DCU covers at the moment are really nice, aren't they?
You're going to tell me off for using that phrase after the podcast?
Yeah, I'm going to beat you.
I've
said it out, it's alright.
I'm sorry, listener.
No, I'm sure actually it's probably alright. You're referring to a certain sort of thing that you don't really approve of. That's fair enough, isn't it?
Okay.
Jane, what did you read? Oh, Jane, has rubbed something off the back of a comic that has disgusted her.
I don't know what that was. It's ink, I think.
They use quite a lot of that to make the books.
I was wow, my fingerprints on my comic. That's great.
You've already bent the hell out of it before you got here.
So it's red. It's well red.
It wasn't intentional.
It's not. It's white and gold predominantly on the cover.
Well done, James.
Black and white and red all over.
This week.
A nun with a javelin through her head. Oh, and can't go through a revolving door. Oh no, I'm really confused. I think I've got it wrong. I'll think about it and I'll come back.
Aren't they usually penguin jokes?
Oh, God.
Black and white and red all over is a penguin who's had a jam sandwich, but isn't very good at eating.
Right.
Anyway, Jane, this comic.
Yeah, this comic. I picked up issue 606 of Wonder Woman, which actually came out last week, but I missed it and picked it up this week. Got one of the nice new DC covers that,
as we were saying,
Jane's picked out.
Lovely. I really like, Nick was saying, the DCU covers are awesome at the moment.
They are cool, but I did prefer I think I slightly preferred the traditional cover they had as well.
You shouldn't have listened to me. I'm a blithering idiot.
No, because I really, really like this. I thought if I just get this one, and then all the rest I'll try and keep the same. So,
I should lower the value of your collection.
Not to do with the bent comic or the fingerprints or
the ink on the back.
Yeah, fair enough.
And you probably can see like indentations where I've lent on it. No, I'm joking.
If this was CSI, you could probably actually work out who the owner of a comic had been by the peculiar imprint of like the impact that person has on their stuff. That'd be fascinating.
I think the giveaway is that Jane always writes in the inside cover, property of Jane, her surname, age
26.
I'm 25. Well, yeah, but everyone wants to appear older until they're older and then they want to appear younger.
Moderately embarrassed, I think you're 26 then, Jane, sorry.
It's okay, it doesn't matter, it doesn't make any difference, does it?
No, I suppose not when you're in your mid-20s. Mm.
It's the Odyssey arc, part 6, and it's called The Huntsman. I don't know how long this is going to run for, this arc. I'm quite... It's like it's only just getting going, and I thought it was going to be a short one. We are following Diane, who is also Wonder Woman. She's having...
Spoilers.
Diana. Is it Diana or Diana?
It's Diana. There's someone... Yeah, no. It's because the kid in this refers to as Diane.
Because he's a fucking idiot.
No, it's because he's a child, and I too am obviously a child. I can't say her name either.
Children are a bit stupid.
Is
that controversial? Sorry.
He just doesn't know yet. It's the brewing of the battle between the Greek goddess of war. I can't remember her name. Where she's the three Greek gods in one. I think it's Morana.
Oh, the Morrigan.
Morrigan, that's it. Morrigan. Yeah. The Morrigan. And the Morrigan is resurrecting people from the battle that the Amazons had, a very great big battle they had a while ago. I'm still getting confused with the continuity. There's a lot, like Nick lent me one of the trays to read. There's a couple of people on Twitter that I might have to ask to see what key things I need to read as well, because it's just things I'm not quite understanding.
This is what normally sends me to Wikipedia for several hours.
Oh,
this
I try not to do that. That would be the easiest thing to do. But I think if I'm going to take Wonder Woman seriously, I should probably read a couple of trades and see where it goes from there. Because it could be that I'm not really going to get into it. But yeah. I really love this run. Diana's been... So she's been fighting... Morgana's been... what did you call him again?
Morrigan.
Okay, Morgana's from flipping Madame Xanadu.
And
Arthurian.
Arthurian legend. Yeah. That's what you just said. I just repeated what James just said. Now I feel silly.
It's okay. I feel silly because I don't understand this comic that I read.
I think you're allowed to not understand comics that are a little mired in continuity.
Yeah. I really don't get this one. I really enjoy it though, but I think I might have to drop it after this run. Mm-hmm. Anyways,
Do you think that the reason you're enjoying it is because you don't understand what's going on?
I think it could be. I'm just making stuff up in my head. Oh, right. And they did this and that. The goddess of war is bringing back, resurrecting people, warriors from the great war that the Amazons had with these other people that I don't really know who they are yet. Some really interesting half beasts that are having to fight, and there's also like a weird sort of army, inter-universe army that I don't think it's what they are, but that's what it looked like to me, that are kind of supporting it. Diane's been injured by one of these warriors. She gets injured in the last issue. Yeah.
So. All right.
Okay.
James looked at me because you said Diane again, I think.
Did I? Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Diana gets injured.
Die. Just call her Die.
No.
Princess Die. Nobody would get confused.
Wonder
Woman gets injured.
Injured. And Phyllis... I can never say her name.
Felicity Kendall.
Philippus is like...
Philippus,
yeah. It is Philippus. Yeah. It sounds like it's made up. No. Philippus, who is her teacher, who's been teaching her about her powers and where she's from and who she is, comes to her aid and then ends up having a battle with this half-beast man person. The fight scenes are really epic and controlled goriness in them as well, I find. They are pretty brutal, but it's not the same sort of blood and guts and ripping people apart that I'm used to.
In things like The Last Resort or whatever it was.
Yeah, lots of things.
It's a bit more all ages than I think we're used to.
It's still gory, but it's contained, and I really like that about it. It's not saying, ooh, blood and guts. It's saying, well, this is part of the story. There's a lot of fighting in this one. There's too many spoilers in this. People are taken, people die, people love, people get married.
People love and get married. Yeah. Fall out and find themselves and each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. Like I said, the story... I'm trying to get my head around the story, and I know I really do need to read a couple of trades. Mm. And, listener, if you can recommend anything to me that will sort of help me pick up on the continuity. Obviously, Nick's lent me...
Sorry, go on.
Listener, if you've been reading Wonder Woman and can solve any of this... solve any of this confusion for Jane, if you can drop her an email courtesy of momcast@gmail.com, that would be really good. Just telling her the stuff she needs to know to make head or tail of this run.
I have to say, though, and I think you probably kind of touched on this when you were talking about Iron Man, this is not the fault of the reader.
Well, not necessarily, no.
But I think, given that this is a continuing arc from the reboot, the well-publicised reboot of Wonder Woman, new uniform, new start.
Yeah, it's a
Jane's reading a book that's mired in... continuity to the point where she's almost finding it unreadable.
Yeah,
that's not the fault of the reader. Yeah.
She is still loving it though.
Which is great. But I just think if you're going to reboot a major character,
it's
like
a bit weird.
At least, for the first arc, for the first sort of maybe half dozen issues, make it accessible. Draw people into the character, and then maybe start introducing some more obscure elements to the continuity. Not doing it in the middle of the very first arc that you're reading is just going to turn brand new readers away, surely.
Is this is following on from... This isn't Straczynski, though, is it?
It or is. It written by still Susan? Him. Oh, okay. I don't know how many he's got left before he's on his hiatus.
Has she been on Babylon 5 yet?
No. What?
James, that was geeky. Jane's not going to know what you're talking about. She wasn't born when Babylon 5 was
Babylon
on.
He Babylon 5, didn't he?
Yeah, and ran the show.
Yeah, showrunner.
But Jane was like...
Sorry, Jane.
But why would she be on
five? There? Because in James's head, they're all like... Right. He's only got everything. Like, Superman has to end up there, and all the other characters he writes have to end up there, because that's what writers do.
Yes.
And in The Astonishing, in X-Men, Joss Whedon made sure all of them met Buffy and had a big kiss-up with her. And
well, the X-Men have recently had a vampire crossover. I don't think that's any coincidence at all.
I don't think it's any coincidence. No, I think it is a coincidence.
Oh, okay.
Do
you not like Buffy, Jane?
I don't like Buffy, and I don't like Dawn. I liked everyone else.
Oh, well, no, that's fair enough, then. Okay.
They're the two annoying... They're those two people I wish that died, and they didn't.
I suspect she doesn't like us making it almost impossible for her to do her review of Wonder Woman.
You're distracting me from the fact that I don't know what I'm talking about, so it's fine.
Is Hippolyta in it? Her mummy?
She was in the first and third one of this, I think it was. But it's kind of like flashbacks because her mum died.
I believe some people don't have a modern and adult attitude towards the opposite sex would refer to her as a MILF, wouldn't they?
What are you doing, James? It's like you're trying to kill me.
They're strong, though. The Amazons are really strong. You can call her a MILF. That's a bit horrible.
Hippolyta.
Hippolyta, yeah.
I don't know how you pronounce it.
Oh, I'm getting confused there.
So you said Hippolyta. Hippolyta. Hippolyta.
Yeah.
Hippolyta.
What?
Hippolyta. Is it Hippolyta?
What's this got to do with Wonder Woman?
Well, that's her mum, isn't it?
What?
I've observed, right...
I'm very confused.
I've observed with words that you struggle to pronounce, you get like a dog when they're barking. You know how, like, they continue doing it until they're distracted. And you get a word that you don't understand. You just keep repeating it over and over again until someone, like, smacks your bottom and tells you to shut up and throws water over you.
I might just want you to smack my bottom.
We should get one of those little spritz spray things that you use to water office plants just to spray at you when you get a word.
Spray in my nose.
Yeah, that you don't understand. Just chip like that.
Hippolyta. Sorry,
anyway,
Jane.
Yeah, they could be... I'm really enjoying the writing, and I really love the artwork on this. And it's Wonder Woman is one of the mainstream characters that I've always been interested in since the reboot. I like the fact that she's more of the woman's woman than a fantasy pin-up superhero, which she was always portrayed. Which she wasn't originally. I found out. Went to see some friends at the weekend, and they actually lent me Wonder Woman animation, and it has a documentary in there about the origins of Wonder Woman. She wasn't she was supposed to be a clever, empowering woman, but she kind of got made into this pin-up superhero. Yeah.
That's quite interesting, because I don't know much about her origin. I was always under the impression that I forget the guy who.
William Moulton Marston. I think said it.
And I'm sorry if I'm defaming him. But I'd always understood that he had a bit of a thing about Amazonian women.
Maybe, I don't know.
There's a lot of bondage in the early ones.
Okay. Yeah, it was kind of like there's a kinky subtext.
I'm going to watch these documentaries because I'm hoping this will help me get a bit of an
idea. I've got a book somewhere about her, but I don't know where it is.
But it was just more than her and fighting her cause and things like that rather than being a pin-up girl, and that's what really drew me to her. So I would like to continue, but I think I'm going to have to do a lot of reading. I need to figure out how much commitment I want to make to Wonder Woman.
If you really like a character, though, doing the reading isn't too... I like reading stuff about Batman because I dig the character, you know.
But how much is there to read? There's going to be a lot of Wonder Woman to read.
I find J. Michael Straczynski... You can pick and choose stuff, and I find J. Michael Straczynski really, like, heavy going with the continuity and stuff right from the start. Like, he always... world build. That's what he does. I find him more of a world builder than actually a writer, and I don't think his character works necessarily. I haven't read Wonder Woman, and I have struggled. I haven't really picked up any comics by him in a really long time, because when he started doing comics, I really struggled with them. Your Wonder Woman comic just has gack pouring out of it. What is going on?
When you say gack, you don't mean cocaine.
Is that
word for cocaine?
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know that.
Isn't it? It's just covered my fingerprints. Probably my hair is in it as well.
Oh, great.
I'm enjoying your reading an all ages sort of superhero book, though. It's good.
Yeah, no, I am enjoying it. It's the writing's brilliant. The story, I am getting confused, but I'm kind of enjoying. I like the fight scenes.
And that she's an empowered woman.
I love her new costume as well, and I really like the artwork. But I am at a crossroads where I have to decide whether or not I'm going to keep picking it up.
I really hope you do. I probably will.
I just think I need some help in what I should get to know the basics and then build on that, really.
Okay, well, we definitely need the help of listener.
Yeah.
To help keep Jane on Wonder Woman. No.
just tell us when J. Michael Straczynski's off it, so we can work out if the next person's going to, like, make it more readable.
It must be soon.
Hmm.
Okay, that's me. I'm sorry I've confused myself and everyone around me.
I really enjoyed it, no, thank you. I like listening to you talk about Wonder Woman, actually, regardless of your confusion.
Because you picked it out for me, didn't you?
Well, no, not just that, but it's just I dig the fact you're reading a superhero book. That's
it's
cool.
Odd, it's odd. Mm. It's I don't count her as a superhero book, though, I don't know why.
No, I can see why you'd... No, I can't. That doesn't make
exactly.
any sense.
I just think, well, she's not Batman, Superman.
Okay.
I know.
She's the other one.
She's the other one.
Yeah.
No, she is obviously a superhero, and I like her. She's a cool superhero.
Cool. It's David Wynne. He may or may not be cross.
Hello again, it's David Wynne, author of Particle Fiction, particlefiction.posterous.com. Read my comic, read my comic, read my comic, buy my book. Today, I'm going to talk to you about Atomic Robo. I've been reading Atomic Robo on Comixology on my iPhone. Makes talking about it a little difficult because I can't have it in front of me while I'm talking about it. But, yeah, I wanted to talk about it because it's great. I've come to it quite late. I've heard lots of people talk about how great Atomic Robo is over the last few years. And I've always meant to check it out. And I finally took the chance on Comixology because you can get each a story arc for just £2.40 on there. Which just seems very reasonable for a trade's worth of material. You know, sometimes there's six issues for that. So, yeah, I've been reading it through, and yeah, it's just really, really good and really fun. It reminds me a bit of Hellboy, but it's got much more of a sense of humour than that. It's about a robot called Atomic Robo, created by Nikola Tesla, and we, through various stories, we kind of jump backwards and forwards in his history, and he's fought interdimensional Cthulhu-type monsters, he's fought dinosaurs, he's fought giant ants, it's really fun and really wacky and engaging and adventurous, dynamic comics. The artwork is by Scott Wegener, is really lovely to look at. Brian Clevenger's writing is full of snappy dialogue, you know, funny one-liners and funny concepts. But that makes it. I'm kind of concentrating on the humour a bit there. It's also just a good adventure comic. If you like adventure fiction, you will like Atomic Robo. And as I say, you can get it dirt cheap on Comixology. I really like Atomic Robo. I'm really enjoying it. I'm pretty much up to date with it now. So it's very much in my head at the minute. I've read, you know, four trades worth of it in the last couple of weeks. So it's kind of leaking out my ears a bit, but. I feel like at the moment in comics there's a nice resurgence in adventure, fantastic adventure fiction that isn't just about guys in tights. You know, between, you know, Hellboy, which obviously has been around a while, Hellboy and BPRD, but also that and things like Fear Agent and Casanova and, you know, even stuff like Incognito, that there's a kind of nice sort of pulp resurgence going on, that if you want to read escapist fiction in your comics, you don't have to read about Superman. If you're bored by superheroes, you don't have to read about The Lonely Death of Got No Legs Boy. You don't have to read boring memoir comics. There is a third way. And Atomic Robo is very much an example of that. It's really, really good. I don't know what else to say about it, to be honest. I think this may be an uncharacteristically short contribution from me. Atomic Robo, it's great. If you like Ideas Man, if you like my stuff, I think you'll like Atomic Robo, put it that way. Yeah, check it out. It's on Comixology. It's you can buy the books, I'm sure, on Amazon for not much, I expect, or you can order them through your local comic shop, I expect. It's fun, it's clever, it's fast moving, it's lovely to look at, it's entertaining, and it's great. Yeah, Atomic Robo, read it. It's really good.
What's been going on this week, then, James?
Oh,
in comics.
Should I? Can I plug something? Because I was really.
We haven't got anything else, have we?
My second favourite Australian after Rolf Harris, Ryan K. Lindsay.
Kylie.
No, I prefer Ryan K. Lindsay and Rolf Harris over Kylie.
And really? Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, I'm not keen on Hugh Jackman.
And Mel Gibson.
Oh, no, sorry, I forgot about Mel Gibson. Yeah, I really like him.
I don't think
and the cute guy on House.
I don't watch House.
Oh, you, yeah, because he'd definitely be ahead, I reckon, if you didn't. So, okay, your second favourite
Australian after Rolf, Ryan K. Lindsay, who obviously writes for... Oh, my God. Now I'm going to list what he writes for me, shitloads. He's got his own blog, Stink Brown, hasn't he? Thought Balloons, the excellent script blog with various contributors, including Shall We Claim Max for Our Own? Mm. Momcast's own Max Barnard.
Yeah.
Who writes on that, and also he writes for CBR. But most predominantly, his comic book reviews appear on The Weekly Crisis.
Right.
We've spoken to Matt and Christine in the past, who also contribute to its excellent comic book blog.
Made, blood.
Made, blood.
Made blog.
Is that the new blog?
Yeah. It's like blog 2.0 is blood.
Yeah.
He asked me to contribute to his series All the Best Comics Have Daddy Issues, and he published it this week. It was very nice.
What is it, though?
It's a question and answer. He asked me questions about comic books and parenthood.
So you were speaking as a...
I was speaking as someone who has a child.
Speaking as a parent.
That's correct.
Who likes comics.
Because I read it, and I couldn't really understand.
I quite enjoyed that he left the bit in at the beginning where I got a bit confused by the title.
You answered the title, didn't you?
I answered the title. Which, embarrassingly, I thought about that answer longer and harder than I did any of the others. But never mind.
I think you did very well. You were very eloquent considering how little sleep you have and how low your IQ is. So,
I think the IQ is more of a barrier than the sleep.
So well done you.
I really enjoyed it. I really appreciated Ryan asking me, since we've had Scarlett, and I addressed this in the piece. I used to write, albeit poorly, for our blog, and I've written virtually nothing since Scarlett's been born. I just don't seem to have the spare time. So it's actually sitting down and having something to write, even if it is answering questions about it. Really enjoyed doing it. It makes me want to start blogging again.
It's when you look in those little eyes, everything else seems like a bit of a waste of time, doesn't it?
Well, actually, it does, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
But everything, not just blogging.
I feel exactly the same about the puppy. So I know, and Mass Effect 2, so I do know what you mean.
Yeah. It's funny, Grand Theft Auto 4 had that.
It's exactly the same for me as it must be for you having a baby.
Absolutely the same, yeah.
Speaking as a person playing Mass Effect 2. Yeah.
But that's Weekly Crisis. Go to the Weekly Crisis. It's great.
All the best... What was it? What's it called? What's the feature called?
All the best comics have daddy issues. Although the only thing is, I was, you know, obviously Matt on our anniversary issue said we've only made it when someone's trolled us, and I was excited because the Weekly Crisis get a good amount of comments, quite a lot of comments on their pieces. So I was brilliant. I'm going to get trolled. You know, someone's bound to have something dismissive and withering to say about my answers, because some of them are a bit pretentious. Where I said, you know, I really wanted to read Mouse because I thought it was
I did wonder about that. I was like, really? You want her to read a book?
Surely, only when she's old enough.
Surely there are as sort of satisfying and fulfilling and worthy volumes that aren't about, like, the Holocaust.
I know, but I just think in terms of if I had to choose one comic book for her to read, and it's the only comic book she'd ever read when she was old enough, then I'd want her to read Mouse. Because I think
that it is a good
book. The most beautiful and most affecting book I think I've read in any medium. Sorry, getting all serious. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That's good.
I really adore it.
But you're worried that you being pretentious was going to draw trolling.
But no, there's not been a single comment. So I really, again, it's a listener plea. Would you please go to the Weekly Crisis and troll me on that? Because I don't feel like I'm complete until I've been trolled.
Speaking of Matt,
yes.
Did we ever work out what it was that Jane said last week that was so?
No, we
controversial.
Don't. We don't know what Jane said last week.
Do you know
week.
What Jane said, Jane? That was so controversial.
What I said. I don't know. It could have been many things, couldn't it?
Matt.
I don't remember.
DM us if you're listening and let us know what it is that Jane said, because we want a teaser for it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So what's the point of him DMing us if we're just going to, like, publicly tease her anyway?
Well, we won't publicly tease her. We see her in our private lives, too.
Actually, yeah, we'd never tease each other. No, on the podcast.
No, that'd be pathetic and childish, and not entertaining to anyone.
Childish.
Yeah.
Did anything else happen this week in comics?
Not that I've read of any great significance. To be honest, but I know stuff happened. CBR and Bleeding Cool, in particular, have been publishing articles on a regular basis.
But you haven't.
Nothing that's tickled me in particular.
I can't think of anything.
No.
No, I got nothing. Jane, did you read anything about comics this week? Was there anything on Loose Women about comics?
Funnily enough, no. There aren't a bunch of alcoholics on Loose Women.
Wow. We might
allegedly.
Allegedly. We may need to edit that out, actually.
Actually, I think we're safe if we assume that what Jane meant was they all appeared to be alcoholics.
Well, no, they all seem to be quite gleeful that they all get really quite drunk every night. Is that not alcoholism?
You're saying that they're odious wine-soaked harridans. Is that what you're saying?
I think you're absolutely right. Actually, there's a rolling cast on that show, and we don't know exactly what day it is Jane's talking about. Don't say what day it is you're talking about, Jane, at this point.
It was Tuesday.
So strictly speaking, it could have been any one of the cohorts of them. Mm. You could be. But my money's on the woman who's mutton dressed as lamb and the woman who was famous for being on a reality show.
Actually,
and a Nolan sister. There's a Nolan sister on
there.
I don't
hear
well.
Any of
my
them.
Wife tells me
it's
that...
Christopher Nolan's mum.
My lovely wife Nicola tells me that Sarah Millican, the comedian's been on it recently.
She's I love her.
I like her too. She's been on it and Nicola says she's been hilarious.
She's a good stand-up.
She's very comedian. I like her a great deal.
She wasn't on it when we were watching.
No. She's a comic.
No.
She is a comic, yes, but not a comic book.
So, yeah.
Okay, so they appear to be possibly... To be fair, they based on the evidence, they do talk an awful lot about getting drunk.
Yeah, I was quite surprised that they would talk so much about it.
Why are you so obsessed with Loose Women this week?
I actually...
Is it because you haven't got very much to say about your spotlight and you're filling for time?
No, okay. Although I haven't. But, no, there's not a lot to be honest... I want
you?
To keep it quite concise anyway this week.
Okay.
So, not the show, I mean the
podcast.
Okay. The spotlight. But no, it's just Loose Women's one of those. It's because when you're having to go to work, that is a sign of freedom from work, isn't it? That you get to watch Loose Women.
I never watch TV during the day when I'm off. It depresses me too much.
We were only watching because we were talking. Mm. James's wife and I were talking and drinking tea and watching Scarlett do really cute raspberries. That was very cute. Yeah. But yeah, I was just quite surprised at how much they talked about drinking. And they seemed very, very happy that they were having nights where they got so drunk they couldn't remember anything. And I was like, oh... That's a bit...
Broken Britain starts with the middle-aged, middle-class women.
Okay, it was
everyone
quite
says strange. It's the youth, but it's actually
really
the middle-class,
middle-aged
women.
I don't really know what the
show
is about,
women.
Either.
It's like Sex and the City, only without a script. That's what it's like.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay, let's not talk about...
And they don't get naked. They don't get naked now, do they?
No, no one got naked.
Oh, good, okay.
I have an apology to make.
Who too? Is it Loose Women?
No, definitely not. I stand by all of my comments on Loose Women. Probably to Kiha.
Why?
Because last week we did him his theme tune, and it was kind of inspired by the little song he did himself at the beginning, but because we did it and then you edited it on at the beginning of his piece, it sounds like he's imitating what we're doing, where actually, essentially, we
intimidated him into doing it.
Yeah.
Imitated him. Oh, so
I want to address that because I felt bad.
So apologies to Kiha for this thing that James is really preoccupied with, but nobody else will have considered for a moment at all, probably.
Yeah.
Okay then.
Good.
Thank you, James.
That's all right.
You are the beating conscientious heart at the middle of not just the podcast but the whole comic industry.
I can actually remember at the point that it hit me. This week, I know where I was and what I was doing when it happened. We were in the car, Nicola was driving, we were about to pull into the car park that we park out when we're walking our dogs out in the New Forest, and I heard it, and then he sung off, and I gripped the edges of my seat, oh no! Like that, because it really, it sounded from our part really unimaginative, and I've barely been able to think about anything else since that moment.
Oh,
your
James.
Life is a fucking roller coaster.
Yeah.
It is, not the fun sort.
I don't find them fun, they terrify me.
I just thought Great Minds Think Alike when I heard him.
No, I just sounded, what an unimaginative git I am.
Well, he did it the week before,
exactly.
As well.
Yeah.
Did you not... I assumed you were inspired by that.
I was, but then I just didn't realise that
it was... So it's him who is repeating himself. Don't beat yourself up. He should apologise to us. You don't have to apologise to Fersky, or I'm just trying to make him feel better. This is about 70% of mine and Jane's prep time for the Momcast is always making James feel better.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because he can't perform. He's like a Seinfeld or something. It's like what you see when he, what you hear when he's in front of the mic is the amazing, bright, shining, talented tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
But there's just all of this other work that has to be done to get him to the point where he can come out here and do this for
us. I'm a wreck in real life. I'm barely a functioning human in real life.
All the best performers are.
If you meet me in the street, my advice is don't.
I mean, look at Britney.
No.
Key-ha! What is it good for?
Talking about comics.
Hello, this is a very brief review by Key-ha from Dissecting Worlds of Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader. Essentially, this is a two-shot by Neil Gaiman on writing and Andy Kubert, where you essentially get to attend for Batman's wake. Well, is it the Batman's wake? There's a mystery in that. Essentially, what we get was some lovely artwork, which pays tribute to Batman artists down the years, is a meditation on loss, a meditation on Batman, and a meditation on storytelling. So far, so Neil Gaiman. I think the story delivers. It delivers very effectively. This copy I've borrowed from the library is also packaged with some other Gaiman stories, one of which through the medium of a documentary filmmaking crew visits Batman's villains. It has a punchline that sort of stands suspended from the actual story, and the artwork's not very exciting. There's another one which looks specifically at Poison Ivy. Again, the artwork's not amazing, and dare I say it, I don't think Poison Ivy actually stands up to her entire story devoted to her. Well, not this one anyway. And there is also a black and white Batman story, which is a almost comic piece. Sort of looking behind the scenes of Batman and Joker as sort of if the characters were actors or something. The artwork is trying too hard to be comic, and nah, it's not great. But as a package, the main story, Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader, is worth it. It's gorgeous, it's lush. Alright, if you found Sandman a bit pretentious, it's probably not for you. But I loved it. Anyway, that's enough for me. Take care, and all the best.
This week, I am going to spotlight a book called Snaked. Now, when we were at Thought Bubble, I was going to say Thought Balloon then, but it's Thought Bubble, isn't it?
Correct.
I went to a comic stand that is the place where Jane, I think, has got some comics from before. Mail order place.
The Two Tone Comics?
Maybe.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of stuff there that they'd apparently, whoever it was, they had a bunch of stuff there that they'd sort of contributed to, I believe, the movie Kick-Ass. And they were just trying to sell it off. It was like a bunch of racks of comics. So they had loads of stuff repeated, and it wasn't in any particular order. So I took the opportunity, and it was really cheap. So I took the opportunity to pick up a bunch of stuff that I wouldn't necessarily have picked up normally. And one of the books was it was an IDW book that had a lovely Ashley Wood cover on it called Snaked. And so I had the first issue, and I read that, and it was lovely. Lovely isn't the right word, but I'll get onto that in a minute. But then I didn't have the rest, and I thought, I had never heard of this comic. It came out, I think, 2006 or something. I had never heard of this comic. I've never seen it anywhere else. 2008, sorry. I've never seen it anywhere else. I'm never going to get the rest of this story. That was a pointless exercise. But at least I have a nice-looking comic unfinished story that I can that I have there on the shelf, taking up space. And then a couple of weeks ago, in Forbidden Planet, we saw that they had a whole bunch of new graphic novels. Not new graphic novels, but like discounted graphic novels. And Snake, to the actual complete trade paperback, was one of the books there.
What a result.
Yeah.
I know. And I was quite excited. I thought, that's exciting. That's a result. It's got a lovely Ashley Wood cover on it. It's got this really nice matte feel to it that I quite like. I think a lot of the IDW books are, at the very least, really nicely produced.
Are we going to start reviewing textures?
Yeah, I think we should.
Brilliant.
Well, I mean...
How's it smell?
In... Don't know.
let's make time every week to review textures and smells.
Yeah.
In this particular case, format and... in this particular case, format and the style of the presentation is quite important, because it's a really unusual book. It's written by a guy called Clifford Meth, who I believe has written novels or is a political writer or something. And it's got art by Rufus Daiglow. Now, I didn't know Rufus Daiglow's art at all until he started being the guy who now draws Tank Girl. I've seen his work coupled up with Ashley Wood's on covers before, but it's much more cartoony and very peculiar. And being a person who has read, knows Tank Girl really well from when it was published, I'd never really liked Rufus Daiglow's art on it. It felt... I don't know if it's that I didn't really like the art on it, it's just the stories kind of felt different somehow. Anyway, it was like too much time had passed, so it wasn't as fluid an experience as it was reading it in Deadline. So I maybe didn't give Rufus Daiglow's work much of a chance, because I wasn't really enjoying Tank Girl when it came back. In this book, his style's still really... really distinct and really clearly his. There are a couple of moments where it actually looks a little bit like Jamie Hewlett, but it all kind of comes together with Clifford Meth's writing to create a really interesting, textured comic reading experience. You can kind of see it's kind of got an almost cartoony style to it. But it's also got this heavily textured and toned Ashley Wood sort of feel to it, which is really, really nice. The story takes place around the time period around September 11th, 2001. And it's basically the story of a man who escaped from prison in the chaos that happens. I think actually he escapes from the Pentagon in the chaos that happens after the attacks, that like the state that America was in. But actually a lot of the story takes place a few months before as well. It's very much a Washington and it's very much a Washington based sort of story, in that a lot of it takes place, the particular central character was on the Democrat campaign staff, and he got arrested wrongly. He kind of got stitched up as part of this, ended up in prison, and then turned out to be a most singular sort of individual. He ends up killing a couple of his fellow inmates in quite a horrendous way. Oh, one thing that's worth warning you about in advance with this particular book is that there is a scene of intense sexual violence that takes place in a man's prison, which sort of gives you an indication of what maybe happened.
Really disturbed. It's that point Jane wants to look at.
Yeah. But basically, what's ostensibly a story about a kind of a story of political intrigue and very blackly, there's a lot of black humour. It's like basically a dark satire of the machinations of all of these political people. And George Bush appears in there as a character. The Clintons both appear in there as characters as well. And obviously, it's set around September the 11th, so you can tell it's very much based in the reality of things that were happening there. But it also doesn't have any reverence about any of those characters, and makes some very sort of clear points about them. And what's slightly peculiar is that at the same time as it's got all this political intrigue and is a study of all of these quite dark characters that you maybe see in the real world in these actual places, the central character also has a peculiar heritage, which is kind of hinted at by the fact that the thing is called Snaked, but also adds this sort of supernatural bent to the story. I hesitate to say too much about it because the way the thing is written is very layered, and it sort of jumps around in time, and saying anything about what happens gives away more than I have gives away the experience of actually reading it. But basically it's a book that my guess is hardly anyone will have read. Certainly Forbidden Planet seem to have copies of it, like, that they're trying to get rid of pretty much at the moment. And it was just a really I read it a couple of weeks ago when it was sitting on my pile of books that I bought, waiting for me to read it until we went away one weekend, and I thought I'd just flick through it and read the first few pages of it. And I basically, at like 2 a.m, ended up reading through the whole thing. It's a really sort of layered and textured story. The actual story itself is really simple, but the way different strands of it start getting uncovered as you're going through, and it never quite becomes like a supernatural horror story or particularly sort of a black comedy or anything, but it's all of those things at once. It's sort of, it's very weird. It felt like, it actually genuinely felt like reading a particular sort of novel. I say like reading a particular sort of novel, having never read anything quite that deep. Something that's much more allegorical and allegorical and sort of a little bit more surreal, but it's in comic form. And Rufus Dayglow's art is perfect for it because it's very expressionistic. And as much as you can see what's going on, you can recognise the characters and stuff. At the same time, there's an ambiguity and surrealness to his style that kind of supplements the story perfectly.
Gives it a mood, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's very, it's lovely.
Very cool. But it also feels really grounded, not just because it has real like settings and stuff in it. Aside from the enigmatic character at the middle of it, who everyone is interested in for one reason or another, it's very grounded, and it feels like everyone's basically trying to screw someone over. Everyone's kind of got an agenda, but it all feels very authentic, if also very satirical. Interestingly, at the back of that book, Clifford Meth has written a little bit of an explanation of where the story came from. And there are two short stories in the back that are essentially what this story is based on. And when you read those, actually, this kind of concretes something I said a second ago. When you read the short stories in the back, you can sort of see that the roots of this story were a much more sort of... they were based on his experiences in a corporate office in America. And have a much more sort of an American psycho feel to them, a Bret Easton Ellis feel to them, where they're about tone and kind of making a point rather than necessarily about what happens in the story. And there are it's basically two stories. One's the story of a man who has basically an awful day or an awful few days. Working in corporate America, and then there's the follow-up. Both of those stories go into making this. What he does, though, is he moves them from corporate America into the political setting instead, because it kind of makes more sense once you're fleshing out the story a little bit more. It has a sort of a Bret Easton Ellis feel to it.
You read American Psycho.
But it feels kind of like that. Like I said, it's much more about tone than it is about plot. Although the plot's interesting, it's another one of those things that, because of the way he tells the story throughout, you don't really realise that actually the plot's quite simple, pretty much the whole way through. It's good. It's very good. Cool. It's well worth picking up. I mean, it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but it's really unusual, and it's worth reading. It isn't particularly reverent. There is quite graphic violence in it, and not just the bit that these guys are very tactfully not really reacting to that much, even though I know that they got quite upset. It's not probably the worst thing in here. There are horror elements to it. There is nudity in it, so obviously read it knowing that. But it's good. I really liked it. Yeah.
Avoid reading around minors and on the train.
Yes, don't read it around people who are. It's not too much a problem in this country. We don't really have minors anymore.
Well, that's Thatcher's fault, isn't she?
Yeah, and she stuffed
our manufacturing industry too.
It's got a cover price of $17.99. My guess is that on Amazon it's probably still not cheap, but if you can find it discounted somewhere, it's definitely worth your money. If you can get it for under a tenner, it's worth it.
Excellent. Thanks, Nick. I remember you bought that. There were Two Tone Comics and OK Comics were both there.
Maybe it was OK Comics.
I'm not sure. I remember you spending a long time going through, when you went through the hall and you turned left, and Two Tone was sort of in the corner there, and I remember you going through that for quite a while.
Maybe it was them. No, it was them. It was them.
Yeah, I think it was them, because you had quite a hoard of books, and you were saying, oh, these are guys that you've used.
I had a massive horse of books.
Yeah, a horse of books. You are
a massive horse.
What are you guys doing? I know what you're doing, James.
You're getting the swingers round. To the I, to the Y.
Yeah.
I'm prepping your house
for one of those massive sex parties.
I'm not. I'm doing my floor. I'm genuinely looking forward to it now.
Pulling
the carpet up, and we're going to do the floorboards.
Mm.
Really, I am looking forward to this.
It's gone all Ray on us again.
I know.
Gone all what?
Well, interesting, isn't it? I'll be doing some DIY, mate's going to come round. Maybe have a few beers while we're making good.
We're going to lift up the floorboards, make a lime pit, and I'm going to put you in it, you slag.
And then draw you Spider-Man.
You guys are funny guys. I'm going to draw you a Spider-Man sitting on his own
face. Why do you have to pull a Popeye face when you're doing it?
I don't know. It just makes it easier, Jane.
Does it? Okay.
Spider-Man sitting on his own face.
You ask too many questions.
Do I? By going under the floorboards.
In the lime pit you go.
I'm going to go see my nephew. The wife and I are going to go and see my nephew.
The wife and I are
going to go and see my nephew. And look, you can take the piss out of me all you like. I'm not having a swinger party. Middle class.
I think I know what you'd rather be doing this week. And George is upset you ain't been invited.
I like my nephew. He's funny.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, I saw a swingers party in Being Human last week. It didn't look like my cup of tea.
Oh yeah.
Actually, I'll tell you what.
It was good. That show's good.
Documentaries I've seen about swingers party growing up on Channel 4. I am the sort of fat, sweaty kind of guy you'd expect to see at one, aren't I?
Pretty much in a gimp suit.
Yeah.
We actually saw the first episode of the US Being Human this week, and it wasn't bad. Not bad.
Okay.
Different enough in approach that you can kind of watch both and it not feel like, you know, you're missing out or... It's good. Liked it.
I watched a lot of Shameless this weekend.
Actually. The American one?
No, the English one.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I like Shameless. It's funny.
What are you going to be doing this week?
I'm going to have a lazy day tomorrow, and then...
You're coming around to that party around ours on Saturday.
James.
All the polythene down that you're getting, you're ripping up the floors, ripping up the carpets, putting polythene down, so everything can be hosed off after.
You're
going to be videoing it though, right? It's going to go on your website.
Yep.
Right, okay. I don't mean... Sorry, listener, I don't mean any of the MOMB websites. I mean James's special website.
Yeah, be up on momperversion.com.
Nice. I'm going to see Friends. I need to read a Spotlight book for next week.
There you go.
Oh, I was wondering. Oh, that's good.
Boy, what's happening next week?
We might have company next week.
Special guest if he doesn't flake out on us.
Wasn't he supposed to be here this week?
That was kind of my fault. He didn't say be here this week.
You're such a fucking idiot.
He said the week after next, which meant next week.
I might read more comics, just, you know, to read comics.
Read comics anyway.
You know, it's nice.
Read your Spotlight book. Yeah. You'll be prepared in plenty of time.
have to reread it though, because I'm just.
What are you doing, Nina?
I don't know. I might do Madame Xanadu. I've got the first trade of Madame Xanadu.
Yeah, you definitely haven't spoken enough about Madame Xanadu on the pod, so you should definitely do that.
Well, we'll be putting it to rest, won't we?
With the first.
I think we did that already by talking about it so much.
I'm undecided. There are a couple of books I'd like to talk about, so I have to go through my pile of comics, which is ever increasing. God, sometimes it's really hard to find time to read comics.
Well, I mean, they only take about like 10 minutes.
I know, but I like to
read in the toilet. That's when I do most of my comic reading.
I don't spend 10 minutes. I don't spend 10 minutes in the toilet.
Do you not?
No.
You would if you took a comic book in there with you.
Yeah, but what would I do? Just
read.
Do you know how to read?
I know how to read, but why not just read in my living room instead of in the toilet?
Sometimes I have a comfort wee just so I can read a comic while I'm having a wee.
I think you guys already knew I did that. You've seen the amount of books, magazines, and comics in my bathroom.
There's a new 2000 AD on top.
Oh, just not that anybody cares. Not that anybody except me really cares that these guys harangue me and take the piss out of me every time I pick up a copy of this. But I came home yesterday and my wife had really carelessly left a copy of Front lying on the armchair. Which proves that I get it for my wife as much as I get it for me.
Why has she carelessly left it there?
Because it's where the dogs could get it.
The truth is, having it in the house disgusts her, and she'd left it out for the dogs to rip apart.
That is not true.
That
might be a little bit true.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit true.
So I have actually got that much reading material in the bathroom that I actually seriously suggested to Nicola that we put a bookcase up in the bathroom.
We could do magazine rack.
Yeah,
that's
it makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah,
but it's all Mad Magazine and stuff.
Yeah. Maybe one day I'll spend long enough in the toilet to read them.
Well, come around my place and have a crack and read some of my comics.
It's only going to be 10 minutes, though, is it?
Is this why men end up having so many problems in real life?
I don't get it. When you finish, you just carry on sitting there until you finish your comic.
It is quite a serious issue, because I listen to quite a few Kevin Smith podcasts, and I think either last year or the year before he had an anal fissure, and that was because he spent so much time just sat on the pan.
Well, I mean, I don't do that.
Fissure? A cut in your bum, basically.
It's very painful, apparently. The thing is that, like, it's nice and quiet and relaxing in there, and you don't feel compelled to do anything except what you're in there doing.
Okay.
It's nice.
All right, I live on my own, so I guess that's...
Well, so you just poo in your living room?
No, it means I can just sit in my living room and be all on my own.
We might have gone too far.
Yeah.
It's like the bathroom is our fortress of solitude.
Oh, no, let's carry on. I think that's it. I think it's like we're not well off enough, really, to have man caves.
Yeah.
Which are apparently a thing that people have these days.
Yeah.
And we actually, given the choice, we'll spend the time with our wives, because we actually quite like them. So literally the toilet is the only time where we are forced to be like completely on our own and it to be completely quiet. You don't get stressed about whether or not you should be listening to music or doing something else while you're in the toilet.
Well, I've got radio in the toilet as well.
Have you?
Just being left alone with the sound of my own thoughts is just terrifying.
Does it feel like death?
Probably.
Like you think death might feel.
Yeah. I can feel it creeping in on me when I'm just alone with my own thoughts. That's why I have to have things to drown that out.
I wonder what would happen if I just left the oven to pump gas into the house and then lit up a cigarette.
We've got an electric oven.
Oh, okay, but you know
for
what
that
I mean.
For that very reason.
Oh, no. Okay.
I stuck my head in the microwave.
This conversation has gone from disgusting to depressing. I think it's time to go now.
That's pretty much our lives, isn't
You've seen the state of the inside of our microwave then, have you?
Goodbye, listener.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hotel.
Yeah.
Why? I always meant to ask you, why is Spider-Man sitting on his own face in that picture? What is that meant to signify? He's sitting on his own face. Come on, let's just think for a minute about the mentality of a man who dresses all in lycra that likes to sit on his own face.
Have you seen who it's by?
I'm going to draw you a narcissistic Spider-Man.
We need to do all of that again in a minute.
Why?
Because it is good. It's comic related.
It's a golden outtake. It's nice seeing you. I've missed you at work.
Save it for the pod, you guys.
Okay.